Welcome to Get Up in the Cool, old-time music with Cameron DeWitt and friends. This week's friend is Corey Husick. We recorded last Saturday at the Harry Smith Frolic, right before the reenactment, and we actually didn't decide to do it until a few hours before. So, Corey, thanks again for being so flexible. Exciting news! The Best of 2017 album, Get Up in the Cool Volume 2, is now available for pre-order. Go to CameronDeWitt.com and click the Albums button, then purchase a digital download or CD. And just a reminder, during Get Up in the Cool month last year, I promised to send download codes to anyone who signed up on the Patreon before November. If that describes you, you should have an exclusive early access download code waiting for you in your email inbox. Make sure to stick around afterwards, and I'll tell you how to get exclusive bonus content for supporting Get Up in the Cool. But first, here's my interview and jam with Corey Husick. Enjoy. Corey Husick, welcome to Get Up in the Cool. Well,
thank you.
Thanks for doing this super last minute.
Yeah,
you're great. Jamming in a tree with your girlfriend.
And yes, I was.
And I approached and I said, will you give a part of your festival away?
Well, gladly.
So thanks
for asking.
Yeah. We're at the Harry Smith Frolic. How many times have you come to this festival?
This is actually my first time here.
This is your first one?
Yeah.
Are you excited for the reenactment?
Yeah, I hope I can stay. I actually have to leave tonight.
But oh my God.
I'll catch a little bit of it.
People were saying that it might start at
Midnight. Wait, where do you live? I don't even know.
Oh, from Pennsylvania.
You're from Pennsylvania?
Yeah, yeah.
Where?
Poconos.
You're in the Poconos.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you go to Gennaro?
Yep. Once in a while.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that's only about an hour away, so.
Yeah. What a great place to live.
Yeah, it is.
Good idea
is
living
awesome.
There.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
But oh, I went to school in Boston, and somehow, whenever this festival was happening, just, I was always busy and couldn't make it out, but glad to finally be here.
Well, you're like a really, you got like a lot of stuff going on.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kind of in a little bit of a lull right now.
Okay, but, good. So yeah. Are you playing more fiddle tunes then?
Yeah, yeah. Lots of festivals and just hanging around home.
Yeah. So you, there are a lot of interesting leads about you, like non-old-time leads.
Yeah.
Like, you.
Right, so.
Where do you want to start with that?
Well, so I graduated last year and ended up getting a postgraduate fellowship, and that allowed me to travel to Uganda and then Indonesia to work with conservation organizations working with great apes.
Yeah. Why did you do that? Not why would one do that?
I mean,
that sounds amazing, but why did you specifically do that?
Well, I've always had an interest in nature and conservation and things like that. Set that aside for a while in college where I studied chemistry. And at this point, this fall, I'm starting a PhD in chemistry. And so I figured it'd be a good opportunity to go back to that thing I really love and experience that sort of thing in different parts of the world, see the world. It was really wonderful. So I spent 3 months living in the mountains of Uganda in close proximity to mountain gorillas.
Just like wild gorillas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. What were you like doing? Were you every day? What was like a day?
Yeah. So most days I was actually just spending time in a village working with a community conservation group that's there. So they're working on managing this small piece of forest that they own that's right next door to the big national park that is home to gorillas. But I did get to spend some time in that national park and one a bit south, actually seeing the mountain gorillas in the wild. But primarily working with these locals who basically have nothing yet seem to find time and money to, preserve forest and plant trees and create buffer zones between farmlands and the forest.
All right, how do they feel about the gorillas? Are
they
pretty committed to conserving them?
They are, but there's some trouble from the community because the gorillas do come out of the forest and raid crops, and that's been a big problem recently.
They just like come and just like munch on.
Yeah, they'll rip corn out of the ground. They'll take bananas right out of the trees.
And you can't just like walk up to them and be like, "Hey,
no, you'd
cut
you'd,
that
you'd,
shit out."
You get your butt kicked pretty hard.
Yeah, yeah, no joke. Those things are scary.
Yeah, and then so after that, I was home for a little while, and then went to Indonesian Borneo. I was working with an organization that is doing work with orangutans there. And that trip was cut a little bit short. I ended up getting dengue fever. So came home a little early.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, that's all right.
But I don't even really know what that entails, but that sounds the worst.
Yeah, it's a mosquito-borne
disease
that just makes you basically feel like shit for quite some time.
Yeah. So, rewind. Like, how did you start playing fiddle?
Yeah. So my dad's an old-time fiddle player.
Great.
And grew up...
David, right?
Dave Husek, yeah.
Dave.
Grew up with old-time music in the house pretty much all the time. He's playing fiddle, occasionally guitar and banjo, and always have records on. Would you
describe him as a hobbyist? Like, was that his sort of main, interest that he spent his time doing?
Yeah, that was pretty much his main interest for a while. So he got really started at that in grad school. He was at Michigan State, and there was a good old-time scene in that part of Michigan. And then since then, it's just, it's been a big part of his life. I heard that and took some violin lessons for a little while, a couple years, but wasn't a huge fan of that. And then sort of shifted into learning a little bit of old-time, and then played Irish music for a little while. But it wasn't long before I just ended up in old time and really, really loved it and have been there since.
What was attractive about old time as opposed to Irish music or any other traditions or violin?
I was never particularly good at reading music, so that definitely pushed me away from
the
classical stuff.
Not that much demanded.
And the music wasn't, for whatever reason, wasn't interesting to me. and I really enjoyed Irish music and what that entailed. But I think it was the community of Irish and Celtic players around where I was. It didn't feel particularly open or inviting.
I've heard that you kind of got to like earn your way in or something. Like you kind of like.
Yeah, I think when I went to Irish sessions, it was very clear who were the, you know, the like expert players and alphas. Who was just beginning. And then the expert players would, in a somewhat condescending way, say, oh, let's play a tune that you might know.
Yeah, yeah.
But then when you go to old time jams, it's like, well, we'll just play whatever and you can play along. And,
yeah.
And that's an environment I really liked. And just the people.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been going to Cliff Top forever and just hang out with people there and hearing the music and just being in a great place and being happy and hearing old time music, I'm sure had something to do with what drew me to it.
Yeah. So. That's cool about the, like, you know, the repertoire and stuff. Like, I remember the first time I heard David Bass play mm-hmm. Cluck Old Hen.
Yeah.
I was like, that was Cluck Old Hen? That didn't sound like Cluck Old Hen to me. You know, so it's like there are some like tunes that are like really hard or like difficult if you're in a jam to like jump into, but there's all of this old time repertoire, especially in the fiddling, mm-hmm. that's like maybe if you were to, let's say, write it on a page, it would look like nothing.
Yeah,
but
right.
to like,
but it's open to so much interpretation
in
the individual, and that's what,
what do you want to play next? What's Kitty
Puss?
Let's
do Kitty Puss. Yeah, so this is a Clyde Davenport tune. Thank you.
Oh, Clyde.
Yeah, a little funky.
Yeah, we're really getting bit up. I don't think there's any dengue fever over here.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. There's like those ticks, though. Like,
yeah,
like, out here that like
make you allergic to meat.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, Lone Star ticks will make you allergic to red meat for a while.
Jesus.
And Lyme's disease, of course.
And then isn't there some sort of thing that has been going around the past couple of years? It's like a tick-borne illness that will make you brain dead or something. People were talking about that, like in northern Pennsylvania New York State.
Yeah, ticks are pretty scary things.
Yeah.
It's the ones you find on yourself, those are not the dangerous ones. It's those little deer ticks that you never see.
They just like latch on, get what they need, and then go.
Yeah.
And those are the ones that pass it on.
Yeah.
Interesting, I didn't know that. Well, that makes you feel simultaneously better and worse.
Yeah.
So, every once in a while on the show, I get like some very scientifically minded people on. I'm always curious, like, what is the role of old time music? Like, some people approach it the same way that they would approach like whatever their like discipline is, or scientific discipline. And for other people, it's like a total escape.
Yeah.
You know, like, where does old time fit in for you? How do you engage with it?
Yeah. So I think on one hand, music has been an escape from this scientific mindset and that way of thinking. But then at the same time, I think I'm drawn to problems, whether it be, you know, chemistry problem or fiddle tune, in the way that
which are problems
yeah. if it doesn't seem straightforward at first, then that's something worth pursuing.
So I've
recently been really drawn to Clyde Davenport tunes, particularly because they're weird. You never know how many beats he's going to play next, and you do that for a while and it doesn't make any sense and you hate yourself, but then at some point it clicks. And when that clicks, there's some sense of pride and just real satisfaction.
Like,
and
understanding how the universe works.
Yeah, and something. So that definitely carries over for me from science and into music.
But you don't feel like, you don't necessarily feel like, if you're exhausted after work or school or whatever, like,
music,
do you come home and play?
Music would definitely be an outlet for.
Okay, cool. All that. Even though you, so maybe you play like what you already know, or like, or do you go home and you start like digging away at whatever weird Clyde tune?
Yeah. Maybe if I were coming home from a, you know, doing a bunch of, you know, sciencey work, it would not be a day to dive into a new a new Clyde tune. That's certainly true.
You're a bird watcher.
I am, yeah. Or birder, as we...
A birder, cool, excuse me, the bird. You're a birder. Birder.
Yeah.
How long have you been a birder?
About as long as I've been playing fiddle. So I grew up in rural part of Pennsylvania, and was always out in the woods and meadows and whatnot. At some point, just fascinated by the birds I was seeing.
So that's not something you inherited from someone else. That's just a thing you started doing.
Yeah, I mean, my parents, you know, they had a casual interest in it. They had some friends that were birders, but I think since I've gotten into that hobby, they've come along for the ride. But yeah, that was something I found and really, really grew with.
Do you like travel for it and stuff?
Yeah, a little bit.
Like, do you go on birding trips, or do you just go on trips and then you try to?
Yeah, I'm
squeezing.
There are certainly
birding.
People who will go on trips specifically to see birds.
Right.
I think maybe there was a point where I did a little bit of that, but lately I've been more seeking places, and there happen to be birds there as well. And so while I'm there, I will appreciate those.
What do you have, like? I don't even know how to ask about this. Is there like a number of birds that you've seen? Is that like something you keep track of?
Yeah.
Does everyone do it the same way? Is there like a standardized way?
I wouldn't say everyone does it the same way, but yeah, people keep what they call a life list of
the birds they see.
Yeah.
My father-in-law was a birder for like a long time, and like he's dead now, but like our whole family sort of talks in birding lingo just long enough for me to know that, like, I don't know how to ask the question the right way, but, like, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your like life list?
Yeah, so it's probably somewhere around 1,500.
Yeah.
Yeah, out of 10,000 or so in the world that are possible to be seen. Yeah.
There's only 10,000 birds?
Bird species.
Wow.
Yeah.
That seems like doable? Is that really hard to see all those?
Yeah, I would say so. I think people who really, really try can get pretty easily into 6,000 or 7,000.
Yeah. Has anyone like just seen all the birds?
No, okay. Definitely not. You know, there are some, there's a birds like the Inaccessible Island Rail that's named for this island that it lives on that, as the name suggests, it's quite difficult to see. So
yeah.
there are certain species that happen to live in places that are not accessible by humans, or it's, you can't get permission to go to those places, things like that.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
And I'm really not the type to seek out, you know, as many as I possibly can. It's nice to see new birds, of course, but
yeah.
There are people, we call them listers.
Yeah.
who go out and, you know, they're going to, you know, I don't know, Tibet just to find one particular species of bird they haven't seen yet, and yeah. Then that's what they care about. But
what's the most like interesting bird that you've seen? Oh, or like the rarest bird?
There were a couple birds that I saw in Uganda that only live in a few thousand square kilometer area of Uganda, Rwanda, and the DRC. So they have such limited range that it's very difficult to find them, but I was lucky enough to see a couple of those while I was there. Yeah, so probably some of those. I'm not sure which one would be the rarest, but yeah.
This wasn't a planned segue, I swear.
Yeah.
I swear, but we're going to play Old Buzzard.
We are
going to
play Old Buzzard. The old bird.
How many old buzzards have you seen?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Man, what cool tune.
Yeah, that's a
great
one.
Love that. So sassy. Oh, very good. All right, I need to get to C real
okay.
quick. Let me get to
yep.
C. Oh, yeah, we're doing good.
This is called The Horse Called Rover. Considering I'm from Pennsylvania, I figured it'd be good to play a Pennsylvania tune.
Yeah, very good.
This one's from a guy by the name of Hiram White.
Is
somewhere
this,
in southwestern Pennsylvania.
Is this a part of the, like, Byard collection?
Yep.
Okay, very good.
And so I Mark Temsler plays this on his record of Pennsylvania tunes. Yeah, so it's similar to that version, but made it my own a little bit.
Shout out to Mark and Richard.
Yeah. Thank you.
Have you played many of the other Pennsylvania tunes?
I played a few, yeah. I'm slowly working my way through that, those albums.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah. Pennsylvania Jams, love to play the Pennsylvania tunes.
I don't get enough of those Pennsylvania Jams. Do you ever do that? I just learned this tune for the show, Such a Gettin' Upstairs. That's off one of them.
Yeah. I've played that a few times.
That's rad. Yeah, it's so interesting, like, just this sort of buried culture.
Yeah. And it's
Pennsylvania.
It's intriguing to me how different tunes have little tastes of, you know, the Southern Appalachians and some New England and more Irishy sounding things. And recently I've been looking into the tradition of fiddling in my part of the state, the Northeast.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of the fiddling that Pennsylvania has been recorded is from Southwestern, South Central. But there were fiddlers, old-time fiddlers and Irish fiddlers that were in Northeastern Pennsylvania, some of who played tunes that would be considered old-time tunes but have never really been, you know, published in any way. And there are a few recordings here and there. So hoping to get my hand on some of those recordings.
Yeah, right.
At some point in the near future, hopefully bring out some tunes. But who knows? Who knows what's in those recordings?
And,
But it's been really neat to learn about that tradition where, you know, in the place where I grew up.
So you're about to move to California?
I am, yeah.
For your doctorate?
Yep. I'm going to Caltech in Pasadena.
I don't even know where Pasadena is.
Yeah, just outside of LA.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you ever been there before?
Just to visit the school.
Yeah. So you're going to be looking up the old-time musicians out there.
Some friends have put me in touch with musicians out there, so I have a few contacts already. But
right on.
Definitely will be looking for that scene when I move out.
People out there, hit up Corey and play some tunes with him when he moves out, if you have any time.
I'll make time.
Yeah, right on. Thanks so much for being on the show, man.
Yeah,
these are great tunes. These are awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I like playing them. That's why I picked them.
So. Yeah, man.
Glad you enjoyed them too.
Jenny, Get Around.
Yeah.
But we're playing it in D, down a whole step.
Yeah, so it's typically an A tune, I think. And I really like the way it sounds in D, but we're going to drop it down to C.
Yeah.
So why not?
I mean, I got to say, like, cross A tunes fit so much better in C or D tuning on banjo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just because it, like, more closely mirrors the shape.
Yeah. I think a lot of times with those cross A tunes, they can get kind of squealy and screechy on the fiddle, and there's a time and a place for that, but other times it's nice to mellow it out a little bit.
Yeah, I've heard like some people feel some kind of way about like the idea of cross tuning tunes having to be an A, and maybe that's not very traditional.
Yeah,
and like I don't know why so many people do it other than like the Milliner-Cokin tradition just saying if this is a cross tune we're going to transcribe it in A, and then everyone doing it in A.
Yeah, I'm really not a fan of that at all. I love dropping tunings down to cross G, cross F sharp, cross F, those kinds of things. It's like, you're playing the same tune, but it sounds so good. And a lot of the source recordings, they weren't playing in A.
No.
They're, whether purposefully or not, they're way down.
Totally.
So, I think, and you know, it depends on the fiddle too. So like this particular fiddle that I'm playing now, it sounds really good, I think.
I like lower. The tightness on banjo of tuning up to A, but it does, it does like miss a little bit of warmth when you really crank it up there. So, yeah, I'm all about it.
Jenny, Get Around. Maybe it's the exactness of the scientist that comes out in tuning. Thank you.
If you want to support Get Up in the Cool, thanks. Visit CameronDeWitt.com and click the button that says Patreon. Then choose a support level that works for you and get its corresponding reward. Throw in a little and I'll give you an on-air shout-out. Throw in a little more and you could get access to the bonus track blog where I post the extra tune that my guests and I always play for each episode. This week's bonus track features Corey and I playing Walking in the Parlor. You don't want to miss it. At higher levels of support, you could join me for a monthly online banjo workshop or download the whole Get Up in the Cool tune archive featuring every tune and song ever played on the show, including the bonus tracks, tagged and separated from the dialogue for your listening convenience. Shout out to Chet Gray, Get Up in the Cool's newest Patreon supporter. Chet, I love making the show, but I couldn't keep it up without the generosity of people like you, so enjoy those bonus tracks and thank you so much. I now offer all those rewards in bulk at a discount at CameronDeWitt.com/store, where you can also purchase Telegram if you'd like me to read a message on air for another listener of the show or promote your business, festival, or crowdfunding campaign. I plan to use the money from CameronDeWitt.com/store to buy some new microphones for the show, and I'm about halfway there, so sign up if you want the tunes to sound even sweeter. You can find my other show, Think Outside the Box Set, wherever you like to get your podcasts, and you can purchase my albums, including Get Up in the Cool Volumes 1 and 2, now available for pre-order, by going to my website, CameronDeWitt.com, and clicking the Albums button. Also on my website is a contact form, and that's the best way to hit me up for Skype banjo lessons. Everything I mentioned in this outro is linked in the app you're using to listen to this, my website, CameronDeWitt.com, and Get Up in the Cool's Facebook page and group, which you should like, follow, and join. Thanks for listening, friends. That's all for now. Come back same time next week for the 100th episode of Get Up in the Cool, featuring a very special guest.